If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the one divine self. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christ. The topic that we're going to examine tonight is the simplicity of self-awareness and the complexity mind projects. So if you're ready, let's take a deep breath together. And call yourself very consciously forward as a pure stream of illumined, perfect, divine awareness. That's it. And just let that perfect self that you are and have always been integrate into every part of your present being. Some of you will experience that as a sensation of warm liquid, almost like honey, being poured down from the crown chakra and flowing through the center of your being. Some of you may feel a sensation of heat with that. Each of us receives spirit in a slightly different way. So we're going to take another deep breath with the intention to integrate that divine self that we are and be conscious of how it integrates in your physical body. Okay? Deep breath. And be aware that the divine breath within you is the whole spirit. That's why whenever you present yourself to do work in this world, in God's name, whether you're standing forward to present a workshop, or you're giving a talk, or perhaps you're a preacher and you're getting ready to deliver a sermon, or maybe you're an actor, or maybe you're receiving the Academy Award. Whatever it is, take a moment to take a deep breath and bring yourself forward as a conscious presence. And pay attention before you speak that integration has taken place. Very important that you don't just speak out of the self that is not aligned. So let's chant three Hues, H-U. This will serve to clear the mind of unnecessary chatter and bring you more present into this moment. Take a deep breath. You. You. Notice how that completely quiets the mind. Just notice So whenever you find yourself upset or agitated or out of alignment, or feeling besought and oppressed by the things you've laid on your shoulders as have-to-dos, just stop and chant three of those hues, or as many as you like. But three will do it. If you're at work, you can always find a time, perhaps on your lunch break, when you can chant those three hues. And if you can't do it audibly, do it silently within your mind, but accompanied with the breath. This is how you can keep yourself in that flow that we would call the authentic self or the divine presence. Now here's another little exercise that we can do. Say with me, if you like, or echoing me, I am in the divine presence. And experience that in the place where you sit right now, you are in the divine presence. Why? Because God is in you, experiencing, witnessing, watching, projecting through your consciousness, your lens of consciousness, the world that you see, which is nothing but the eternal light and love and sound of God. Just be aware that you are in divine presence. It's right there, right where you are. It is in everything you see. Because God is in that part of you that is seeing. God is the light by which you see. Now, the next statement. The divine presence is within me. Take a deep breath and write it right down into the center of your chest. And realize that breath, that place you point to whenever you indicate yourself, that God is present within you. When you pray, address your prayers to that place within you. Don't imagine God away from yourself somewhere off in the sky somewhere. God is right inside your breath. It is God that is beating your heart. It is God that is the life force within you. It is God that is the love within you. And God, and life, and love, and your own true self are one and the same. And our next statement, I am the Divine One, present here and now. And just consider that wherever you are the divine that is presenting itself. That is who you truly are. You've never at any time been anything less than the divine presence. So the simplicity of self-awareness. You know, one never thinks to seek what one already is or has. So why this search to find one's self, one's true nature? Is it not odd to search for one's own self? I mean, really, think about it. What does one expect to find? And how would that supposedly greater, truer self differ from what one is right now? By which criteria is one to determine if one has found one's true self? These are all questions we have to ask ourselves. Or not, you know. But I think it's useful to ask yourself questions like this. Otherwise, we keep looking and creating complexity unnecessarily. So maybe some of you have journaled the qualities you seek to develop and embody that you attribute to that true self. We'd have to ask ourselves, have we succeeded? Are we, in fact, embodying our ideal qualities now, today, or have we found it frustrating or even impossible to consistently live true to our own ideals? Well, good. If you're in that category, good. Because you've realized an approach that isn't working for you, and so that means you can now release it. You can set yourself free from that imperative that you have to be a certain way to be your true self. And you know, finding what doesn't work is as valuable as finding an approach that does work. Because, you know, true life is all about being present with what is and working that to your highest advancement. So that truly every single thing in your life is useful. Is useful. There are no wasted experiences, no wasted moments. But let me tell you right here. When we're born, we've been dealt, let's say, a deck of destiny cards, okay? These consist of the, let's say, the portion that we have chosen to deal with in any given lifetime, because this particular lifetime and its circumstances are ideal for that particular working through of whatever that is. Be aware that every single thing in your life is the result and the consequence of actions and thoughts, words and deeds that you have set in motion at a prior time. This would be what we would call your portion that you bring forward as a destiny in any given embodiment. In Sanskrit, it's called prarabdha, prarabdha, or prarabdha karma. It is that portion, that deck of cards, let's say, that we have dealt to ourselves in any given lifetime. And so you have to play the cards you have in your hand, don't you? So you can never at any point, I mean realistically, at any given point, complain about your life and the circumstances in your life, which are the very things that you have set in motion to work through in this lifetime. And so with the deck of cards that you have in your hand, play them to your maximum advantage, your maximum highest good. But you can only do that if you do it with awareness that that's what you're working with. That is the grist of the mill that you have to make the bread of your life from at this particular point in your existence. So the first thing is to get to know yourself. And I would say that you need to be comfortable with the self that you are, within the environment in which you have placed yourself, with the companions that you have chosen to surround yourself with, because they were all self-elected and carefully self-chosen. And not one experience that you're going through is not for your highest good. I know. Many of you have situations that are very gnarly, very difficult, very challenging. But these are the very situations that you as a soul, of your own free will and in the wisdom of your higher self, elected for this particular incarnation. And those of you that are making this your last obligatory incarnation, you're going to really, play a full deck and probably many rounds of the game. Some of you are living multiple lifetimes within this one so that you're going through rapid cycles of completion and next and completion and next and completion and next. Many of you email me and ask if you're a walk-in. No, I wouldn't say so. I think it's unfortunate to be a walk-in, quite frankly. But many of you are starting a new incarnation within this same incarnation so that you don't have to come back and do it again. You want to get it all completed now. And that means you're going to go through all kinds of experiences rapidly, 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 in, out, next, on. So you have to learn to let go. Moment by moment by moment to what was, and move to next, 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 next. Keep going, keep going. And the more advanced the soul, the more difficult the path, the more challenging the obstacles, and the more you are kept moving. You have to keep moving because it takes an action to undo an action here in the lower realms of time, space, and causation. It's like you use a thorn to remove the thorn. But to do it through self-awareness, you have to be at the level just above the problem, because the problem isn't solved at the level in which the problem exists. It's only seen clearly and resolved from the level above. So that's why we practice what is called soul transcendence, or moving the inner awareness to the level just above where that problem is pressing on us. And we do that simply by taking a deep breath and connecting to that inward energy right in the center of our soul, and riding that conscious awareness right up through the top of the head and into what you could call your higher nature, your higher self, your soul, that unit of individualized awareness that basically holds the hand of the cards that you've been dealt. So whatever you call it, connect with that. And you'll find that that is a part of the wiser self that is completely unflappable, completely centered and serene, that sees the big picture. Some of you, when you're journaling, you can tap into that part of yourself by writing a letter to yourself as if you were your wiser self or your master. Some of you can write a letter from God or the Divine Presence or your inner master to you. And when you reread it, you'll find it really did come from that wiser self that can see the bigger picture. And so there's so many techniques and ways that we can connect in with that part of us that truly is above the problem scenarios and event horizons that keep coming forward. So self-awareness is so simple. You become aware of yourself. You begin to pay attention to what you're expressing so that you cease operating in autopilot mode and you become self-directed. Now, you import unnecessary complexity by ascribing to yourself idealistic demands and expectations that are contrary to your nature. To become self-aware, you only need to pay attention to your natural inclinations. Why? Because these are the embedded inclinations that you have brought over from your previous lifetimes. They're called samskaras in Sanskrit. They're like grooves in a record, let's say. And they are your natural inclinations that are prompting you to be as you are with the deck of cards that you hold in your hand. Okay? So you pay attention to what is your natural inclination. Like some of you say, well, I'm a people person. I like to be where there's people. That's part of your samskaras, your inclination. Some of you may say, well, no, I'm kind of reclusive. I like to work behind the scenes. I like to be with myself a lot. I'm not much of a social person. And so you pay attention to that. Some of you may be a mixture. You have a time when you really like to be out there with people, but you also have the times when you like to be quiet with yourself. But you notice. So we all know that when we are simply being ourselves, we feel at ease and comfortable in our own skin. I mean, we don't begin and end with our skin, but I'm talking about the experiential state that we find ourselves in when we're not trying to be something to please somebody else or to curry favor or to give an impression. Which, you know, when you do that, it creates a sense of stress and strain. Or you're acting, you know, out of pretense. So be aware when you have that sense of stress and strain and you're feeling insecure. And just notice that. Oh, you're trying to impress or please someone. And you don't have to judge it. You just notice that it creates for you unnecessary complexity, which if you just simply are yourself, you know, you're not going to have that. So, of course, we're not saying that you don't abide by the social and moral propriety of your particular culture. You know, you don't act obnoxiously. But I'm talking to light workers of considerable advancement in each of these seminars. And you've already worked off most of the rough edges. And you're pretty aligned with that higher self. But many of you are doing things that are making it too complex. You're making it too crazy for yourself because you're expecting things from yourself that are inconsistent with the way that you put together, not only as a soul, but also on the other levels that the soul operates through to get down and through your human personality. You've got all these different levels. So one of the things we expect is to reach a sustained high. Many people will have like a peak moment, and then they'll do everything they possibly can to repeat that moment, thinking that if we're not in that all the time, somehow we've fallen or we've failed or we're not there. Let me tell you that the human instrument, as it is now at its point of evolution, is incapable of holding a sustained high all the time, even if you're a great, great yogi. You would burn out your brain and nervous system if you were constantly in that state. Sai Baba has said that Nirvikalpa Samadhi, which is always attributed to be the very highest state, the nirvanic state or the complete oneness with God state, that the body would fall away like a dry leaf after 29 days. So even when you attain those high, high, high levels, you have to come back down and be present. Because that's what the time that we're in right now is designed to do. Notice, I'm speaking to people who are not living in a Himalayan cave. You're not a person who has lived for thousands of years in a subterranean cave meditating in the Himalayas. That's not the deck of cards that the people I'm speaking to each week have been dealt. Nor, probably, are you in a cloistered order, where you're repeating a tradition that has a whole way of governing every moment of your life so that you have no wiggle room to exercise individual conscious choice? I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to modern-day men and women who are initiates of a certain level of higher awareness, and are living in the world, many of whom are married, have children, have jobs, have a life in the world, but at the same time are alive and aware spiritually. At the same time, they may be enlightened. They may be liberated, freed souls. They may be bodhisattvas. They may even be avatars. Maybe ascended masters. But we're all somewhere in that state of constantly bringing ourselves into greater vistas of enlightenment and more expanded awareness. And it keeps going. It doesn't stop. So don't expect to reach a sustained high and stay there. Any stasis is boring. And the nature of life and the vivacity of life is constant malleability, constant change, constant morphing into ever more lovely forms. Now bear in mind, I'm speaking from the level in which consciousness, which is the sum total of everything we've become conscious of and have exercised and have experienced, I'm talking of that level now, the ocean of being, which is our true self, in which we seem to individuate as waves, as individualized waves. Now the problem is we've identified with being the wave and we have forgotten that we are the ocean of eternal life itself. We are the very ocean, which transcends our individual experiences, but doesn't negate them. It absorbs them and yet is the constant perfection, which in highest truth we have never, ever left. But now we are experiencing the variabilities of constantly changing consciousness patterns. I liken it to, for example, the ocean, or even a lake. If you've ever lived at a lakeside or near the ocean, you'll notice that it's never the same any 2 days. It's constantly in motion. But I want you to be aware of another fact. When you dive deep into the ocean of consciousness, let's use the ocean as an example. The ocean at one time was above land. So in the ocean, you have mountains, hills, valleys, cliffs, drop-off points, crevasses. You have depths so deep you can't even speculate how deep. And then you have the shoreline, you have the froth, the bubbles, the wave action. And consciousness is just like that. It has all of those dynamics inherent in it. So when we say dive into the ocean of the self, be aware that it's going to contain all of these variables. Be content with the variables and the variabilities of your life. Learn to enjoy the process of life. I'll bet if I was to ask you what you really, really, really love the most, if you got deep enough, you would say, I just love being. I love being alive. I love the self that I am. I love the uniqueness of my particular being. I relish existence itself. And those of you that fear death, your one fear is that you're going to lose that sense of being alive, of being the self. And I absolutely promise you, you do not, and will not, and cannot lose your life. Your life is ongoing. You can be living it at a very narrow, egocentric level. You can live it in the transition into a greater understanding of the self. And you can live it from a very vast, universal, and personal place of sheer self-bestowal, where you're just like the sun, bestowing your rays of love and light and beneficence upon all. So there's all these different levels at which you can manifest the sense of self, the sense of aliveness. And beloved, you will never lose that. What do you lose? The little petty personal self, the little narrowly defined individual personalized self, that changes from life to life. Your outer facade, your outer costume, your outer role play, the outer players that come forward to work with you so that you can play your deck of cards, your co-players, let's say, your game mates. And they all come forward to cooperate with you in setting yourself free and realizing the self that you truly are and have always been. So whether they play adversaries in your life, or friends, or acquaintances, or people you love, or people you can't stand, they've all come forward to serve you and to be served by you. So you've come to co-play and co-participate in this broadening of the sense of self. But it's the life that you love. It is your own existence that is most precious to you. And the one thing you can never lose is your existence. That's forever. But the little limited definitions will dissolve. Just like your sense of yourself as a baby, if you remember it at all, is like a story someone told you, but it's not real to you. It's like a story of somebody else. Your story is a toddler or a child or a teenager where are they now? When you try to think of them or recall what you felt then, it's all distorted. You can't really return to that moment because it is no more. You can't return to the baby, to the child, to the teenager. Those are all parts of the changing of the consciousness as it moves through what looks like maturation in time-space, which has to do only with the physical body, the physical form. And that's why some souls do not enter the body with the first breath. Sometimes there is just a physical bodily elemental that keeps the physical organism alive. I know one woman who didn't come into her body until she was 10 years old, and she has no recall whatsoever of her first 10 years. That's not terribly unusual. The soul doesn't want to be imprisoned unnecessarily in a physical vehicle that it can't fully operate through. That's why some children, when they come in, they scream and holler and cry, and they're just so frustrated in not being able to communicate and speak and operate consciously through their vehicle. So all this talk about when life begins, it isn't so cut and dried as we would think. Normally, most people say, the soul enters with the first breath. I would say that is only to a certain extent that works for that soul, but not necessarily always is that the case. You have many co-participants that bring the soul into the body. These are many, many devic and elemental spirits that work as part of the creative project of creating a physical body and the instrument to which the soul will eventually be housed and used as its vehicle of expression here. Just be aware, there are many, many forces that coordinate and cooperate to enable you as a soul to have a vehicle through which you can express in any given lifetime. That expression is not always audible. You are what you are, and your vibration touches to everything in existence because you are what you are, not because of what you do or you say. You are a unique vibration of divine love in time-space, a unique vibration. Why? Because every soul comes through a whole chrysalis of varying and very different experiences. That's why we're like a snowflake. We're all made of water, which is cold, which has turned into snow. But individually, we're each unique, like a snowflake. And that's what's called the individualized self, or jivi, jivatma, or soul. Now, that's only one part of ourselves, because we have the immortal I am that forever is, which we could say is identical and indistinguishable from God. So we're speaking now tonight, and in each seminar we like to look at this whole sense of who we are and what we are and how we operate here. We like to take a slightly different lens, a perspective. It's like taking a diamond and examining all the myriad facets that catch the light. And our being is like that. We're like this diamond with multiple facets that catch the light. And the light is divine sentiency and consciousness itself. It's that which we would seek to reflect in each embodiment. With, given the deck of cards that we have to play, we want to play that light of consciousness in a particular way that reveals a new aspect, a new point of view, a new sense of self. And that's why we have to keep changing and moving into different experiences of the self. Now, we also expect things to be consistent and never change. Well, that's setting yourself up for misery and suffering and, all of the things that go to make us unhappy is that we expect things in the material world to never change. Well, I point you back to looking at yourself in the mirror. Where's the baby? Where's the child? Where's the teenager? Where's the person you were 10 years ago? Where's the person you were a year ago? Because every single cell in your body is completely new. I think every 7 years, there's not a single cell in our body that is the same. I think that pertains to the skeletal structure. But some of our organs, they're renewed every month or every so many weeks. So we're never the same physically from moment to moment. It's constantly changing. So why should you be unhappy when the body starts to show signs of aging? Why do we expect ourselves not to change and go the way of all things in nature when we look at ourselves in terms of being a form, a physical body? But I'll tell you, once you really realize and get that you're not your body is a vehicle for a temporary life expression. Well, not life, temporary life, but a temporary lens or role play of expression. And yes, if you look at nature, everything has a cycle in which it breaks through the soil and it reaches for the light and it develops and it produces flowers and fruits. And then it declines and it goes back into the earth. And then it's recycled and it comes up again as a new form. And that doesn't bother us. The change of seasons doesn't bother us. Nor should the change of the physical vehicle bother us either. That's one of those unnatural expectations and complications we put upon ourselves to try to keep ourselves looking the same without change. My gosh, I'm here in Hollywood, where people spend thousands and thousands of dollars to try to keep their bodies looking like they did when they were 20 or 30. What a waste of time and what an unnecessary complication to try to keep your body looking the same with no change. You see how you set yourself up for misery? Some people are very unhappy with their body, how it looks, or the gender that it's manifesting. Beloved, your soul has no gender, okay? Only the physical body is gender-defined. And you've had many, many, many lifetimes in which you've been a man, many, many lifetimes in which you've been a woman. You've had countless husbands, countless wives, countless brothers and sisters and children. And they keep changing. And they keep coming back if you love them. And they keep coming back if you hate them. And they are in your face if you have unfinished business with them. But the roles keep changing. Your husband in this life may be your child in this life. Your grandfather might be yourself, and so on and so on. The roles keep shifting. If you feel unhappy that you're born a certain gender in this lifetime, you can absolutely be certain that your next incarnation, you will be the gender that you want to be. Does that mean that you don't do what you can do to make your body as pleasing to yourself in this life as possible? No. If that's the deck of cards you have been dealt, if that's the, excuse me, if that's the samsara or the tendency that you come in with, the karma, so to speak, then do what you have to do. Do what you have to do to be comfortable with yourself. But I'm just saying that every desire you have will be fulfilled. It has to be. So I would think that it would be a little bit more practical not to identify and put so much focus and attention on your body and its plumbing equipment, and put more attention onto who you truly are. Who are you? Who is this person? This consciously aware, sentient presence that you take with you that never ceases to exist. You can't get away from yourself, but you can get away from yourself concepts and your attachments to being a certain way that isn't. One of the greatest happiness states that we can be in, maybe the only one in this state that we're in now, is to be at peace with that which is. To be content with where and what one is at this time. Keeping in mind that it serves a purpose or it would not be present in your life. It would not be something that you're going through. And so it has a divine purpose that is perfect if you could see it from the highest level. So for the last, let's say, about 1625, the energy started to shift from the Piscean Age to the Aquarian Age. The Piscean Age was the age of outer authoritarianism, idealism, and the vehicle of revelation came through religion. Since 1625, we've been gradually transitioning into what is called the Aquarian Age. Now, the Aquarian Age is very different. The focus in the Aquarian Age is coming into community and group consciousness and self-determination. As we followed others and their authority in the Piscean Age, so we're learning to exercise our own God-given prerogative to be ourselves and live our life as we choose, through self-determination. But also because for us now to work on the planet with its prevailing billions of people, we're going to have to learn how to live in one world as one family. So naturally, we need to move into a consciousness of communal sharing. Community doesn't mean we all live in a commune, but we have to have the mentality that we live on a very small planet and we have to co-share, coordinate, and cooperate if this thing is going to work. Be aware that all of the conflict we see in the world today arises from those two different energies, the outgoing sixth ray of authoritarianism and controlling, where some authority controls the behavior of others, and the new Aquarian Age, where we're moving into cooperative sharing and coexistence. And you'll see that this is playing out in every area of life. You'll see this conflict between the old authoritarian, you know, where you put all of your faith in some outer leader or authority or political figure or religious figure, or you put your full authority into some written scripture or some established tradition, and you resist that change. It's like it's a little bit too big of an arena for some people. They like the structure. They like to be told what to do and what to think and what's true. And they expect that there's one answer and one way that's going to fit everybody. Whereas in the Aquarian age, it's more like live and let live, and you do your thing and I do my thing, and let's see where we meet and where we can dance together and coordinate. And yet we retain the ability to be self-governing and self-respecting and self-determined and, in many cases, self-aware. So we're moving now from the I to the we. And ultimately, when you realize God, you move to the he or the she or the it. But you keep bringing yourself more and more into the unified state of oneness, where all life is connected. Every little thing that we do, it is said, affects the entire universe. That we can never at any time act individually without having a rippling effect throughout the fabric of existence itself. They're saying, some of the enlightened ones, that the flutter of a butterfly's wing can cause a storm on the other side of the world. I don't know if that's true, but I've heard that story so many times, it must have some truth to it. But bottom line, we're all connected. We're essentially one being in many, many aspects in which we are playing out through different roles. But we're all essentially one Atma, one divine spirit. So in the Piscean Age, we had this illusion that somebody else could tell us what to do and could do it for us. That was the age of the outer authoritarian figure, whether it was a guru or it was, you know, the mother superior or the head priest or whatever. And, you know, the populace just kind of fell in line with whatever that particular authority was bringing forward. But you know what? We've been there and we've done that. And we're not there today and we're not doing that. What we're doing today is moving more and more out of the sense of self-concern, selfishness, and self-focus, and to beginning to find ourselves in the well-being of others. We need to learn how to live for the well-being of others, for the life enhancement of the whole, to where we began to lose this fixation upon our own little tiny 10 acres, our own little circle of family and friends. We began to really care about the well-being of every single sentient being on the planet. So the less you complicate your life with little personal stuff that really doesn't matter, that you can't change because it follows the laws of nature, and the more you focus on what, where you are proactive and procreative, that is from the higher divine sense of self, the better. And so that is the transition that we're in. Now, even as religion was the vehicle of revelation in the Piscean age that we're passing out of, today the vehicle of revelation is science, but not godless science. It is science with God, where the understanding of evolution and the evolution of the form and the expansion of consciousness through awareness is wedded with a sense of understanding that God is both transcendent and immanent. Transcendent within and as creation, and immanent as the spark of the divine that we call the soul within all life forms, within every human being. So that understanding, the understanding of God, which we've been told by the Master Joel Kuhl, DK, that is going to involve a revelation that I think we're currently having regarding the sun. Two revelations, the understanding of the sun and the understanding of the fact of the soul. And I guess I would have to add a third. The understanding of the unified field or the morphogenic field that Dr. Rupert Sheldrake has popularized now in our understanding. When these three things become integrated as our ongoing new paradigm of understanding. And we're doing that. We're actually in that process right now. We're also beginning to understand, or at least get in contact with, the four etheric subplanes of the physical plane. Because we're becoming more clairvoyant. We're beginning to see more and more things that were formerly invisible to us. They're beginning to move into our range of visibility. And they're physical, but they're on a higher vibratory level than the dense physical that we're used to seeing. And that's very important because when we begin to cooperate consciously with the devas, the elemental spirits, the fairies and gnomes, and all of the different life forms that inform and express themselves through plant life and animal life and the earth, wind, fire, water, and ether realms, we begin to understand the interconnectedness that we have with every element of nature. We're completely one with all of the elements of nature. We're made up of those elements. And as we integrate more of our authentic true self, we are bringing light and illumination and hastening the awakening and the evolution or the vibratory rate of all of these elements of nature. So we're at a wonderful place right now. I know it looks very, very scary when you turn on the evening news, but then the evening, well, maybe not always, but the newspapers of the past and the evening news on the television today are not very different. They're really not very different. They're pretty much the same. And these are old patterns that we might say the samskaras that we have collectively brought forward to form our present understanding of what the world is and what life is. This is what we've all co-created. And so we have to deal with it. Because everything that we express energetically returns to us. It doesn't leave us. It returns to us. If it's in alignment with spirit, then that's good. That's wonderful. Then we don't have any problems. But if we have sent forth children of darkness, they return too. And we're responsible. What do we do with them? We have to resolve them in love. We have to clean them up and embrace them and incorporate them in our loving. So this is all that we do. This is all what we're doing. We're incorporating more and more into that safe space of our unconditional loving, which is the natural self. This is the real, true nature. The real, true nature is our ability to embrace everything with unconditional love. That is the Christ itself that we are. That is the unconditioned self. That is the self that goes from age to age and from life to life as the beloved. So don't make your life unnecessarily complex, complicated. Don't import things into your life that don't resonate with you, that aren't part of your natural flow, that are not part of the deck of cards that you have been dealt in this incarnation. One of the things that you need to do is to accept your own spiritual right and authority to live your life under your direct guidance. It's better to make a mistake and have to choose again and retrace your steps than to follow somebody else's advice that doesn't fit you. There's a reason why every single one of us dislikes being told what to do, bossed around, manipulated, played, controlled. None of us like that. Because we all have a sense that it is our right to live our life as we determine is best for us. So part of the Aquarian age is giving yourself the right to self-determination, self-awareness, self-actualization, and not to turn over the authority of your decisions and the things that you do in your life to another. You're not going to get any brownie points for doing that. You have to learn to play your own deck of cards, to determine what you need to learn in the manner and timing that shows up for you. So, trying to fulfill the expectations, rules, and demands of another is part of that old paradigm, that old Aquarian age. And everyone longs for freedom. But you're only free yourself when you are true to yourself, when you are loyal to yourself. Then you can live in freedom. Otherwise, you're just a puppet. You're just a, you know, you're not self-governed and therefore not self-aware. So be aware of yourself. Watch yourself. Observe your behavior. And direct yourself on the course that seems to you to be the brightest, the most loving, the most uplifting, and the best use you can possibly make of your life. But it's your life, and it's for you to determine how you're going to live it and what you're going to choose to do or not do. So don't give that over to anyone else. And any teacher worth their salt will never, never do that. They'll never tell you what to do. They will point out perhaps techniques and things that work for them, that might work for you, but they leave it to you to work those things or not. You always have that freedom, you know, according to what deck of cards you've dealt yourself in this lifetime. But I think you've gotten the gist of what we're trying to say here. But keep yourself free, keep your life simple, and be true to yourself. And you'll find that as you're true to yourself, that true self will manifest more and more through you. And always there is more. Enlightenment is endless. And of the glory and wonderment and splendor of the divine, there is simply no end. So I hope this has been helpful. And we have another way of looking at our lives today. And hopefully keeping it much more simple. So raise your hands and bless every sentient being, all the worlds, everything going on this planet, all of the global issues and all of the things that are being worked out, and all the participants and players. Recognize them as all parts of the one self that we all are, and wish them well. Have that sense of absolute wishing the well-being of all beings. And let's go out chanting on I, you. Deep breath. On I, you. Blessings and grace to each one of you. Adonai.